on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday edition of Invest Talk. I appreciate you being with me. It's August 27th, 2015, and today I have with me Justin Klein.
Always great to be here, Steve.
And as you know, appreciate being Justin. Invest Talk is for everyone. If you've just begun listening and you think we get a little too technical at times, you're officially invited to change that. You can call us and ask something, a beginner question. It's okay. And don't be embarrassed about it. There's probably a lot of you out there. So don't hesitate. Just because we might talk about things that might be over your head, we don't mean to. We will try to talk into a place where you're comfortable with, but you have to tell us. So tell us. We want to hear from you. The stock market has gotten everyone's attention this week, and we'll get our market summary coming up in just a few minutes, but it certainly is volatile. That's one thing you can't see. When the market makes gross moves like we've seen, nearly every stock goes up and almost every stock goes down. It rises and falls with the tides. Okay? But there are some that fight against it, but yeah. Generally,
the rising tide lifts all boats, and vice versa. When the tide goes out, you know who's swimming naked, as Warren Buffett would say.
The best way for a company to benefit you as its owner is to create value, shareholder value. And the best way to do that is to create profits, business profits. Ultimately, any successful business must create profits. So how do you measure profitability? Well, one measurement is gross margins. Do you know what that is? That's the percentage of revenue a company gets after paying for the cost of goods sold. For a manufacturing company, that is a simple calculation. It's pretty easy. It's straightforward. For a service business, it's more defined as cost of revenue, which includes labor costs, commissions paid, raw materials, office supplies, and shipping costs, that kind of stuff. So those are that's one way to measure gross margin. Another is return on assets, ROA, determining how much a profit a company has created in relationship to their assets. A company making $100 million in profit with $1 billion in assets is much more impressive than another company that creates $100 million in profits from $100 billion in assets. Right? It's just simple. It's that simple. So return on assets is kind of a measure of efficiency on their return on the investment in the company. How efficient is it? How much are they paying you? How good are they at paying you back money, paying into the company? And of course, there's a lot more of these kinds of measures, and you kind of have to start to learn, understand them if you're going to be investing for yourself and understand how they work and what's good, what's bad. Different industries had different profitability measures. Different industries had different gross margins, and you can't just say, well, I want a gross margin of 20%, then go look for companies that have that. That doesn't work. I wish it did. It's not that simple. Anyways, just some helpful hints for you. So let's try to answer some questions. This one came in between programs. Our 24-hour listener line is always open. But first, let's go to a live caller from Rob in Atlanta. How you doing, Rob?
Hi, Steve.
How's it going?
I have a general question to ask. Basically, last week we saw the volatility in market, and we noticed that market dropped, 500, 600 points, so on. And we had a 10% kind of correction, and then the last 2 days market is going up. Let's say for some odd reason, tomorrow market goes up another 500 points. Mm-hmm. Can we say, okay, we had the correction, now correction is over, and we start moving up, as you said. We need this correction for market to sustain its momentum, or this is not considered correction?
Well, that's a good question. For a correction is always, a decent correction is 10%. Okay, we've had it was about maybe 12 or 13% from the top to bottom. May 21st was the absolute top on a closing basis and then fell all the way down. That was about a 13% correction. So you can say, yes, we've had a correction. But this speed of falling so fast and then getting all back in a week, That's not a healthy environment.
No, the volatility like this is not healthy. Think of 2008, 2009. You know, we had big up days in late 2008. People forget that. You know, there were 500-600 point rally days, but overall, that obviously that was very weak. So the biggest problem with right now is that the trend is now down. The trend is broken. The uptrend that we've had since 2011 was broken. So if it can recapture that, sure, you know, we could make new highs. But, you know, it, as long as the moving averages are pointing down and it's below that trend line, I mean, the path of least resistance is lower.
One of the things I'll say, though, Rob, it was a correction with high volume.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's why you've seen this bounce. You know, okay. Everyone kind of freaked out, and now you're seeing the reflex bounce. And is it a sustainable bounce? That's the question.
Some technicians are calling this a dead cat bounce, meaning that it just bounced because it's way oversold very, very fast. And now we're moving into, we were just talking about it just before the show, that it looks like we're moving into some resistance areas. So we'll see if it can break through. It would not be surprising, Rob, to see it retest the bottoms that it just made, you know, this week.
Okay.
So don't get too anxious yet.
And we're not into the famous Christmas rally
period
yet either. So, and August and September are the worst months for the markets generally. So, you know, we're just finishing up August here, and we have September to go. So I would certainly expect more volatility between now and, you know, say Halloween time, and, you know, how low we'll go, you know, that's hard to guess.
I would feel much more comfortable if we go down again, retest the lows, and start up again. I feel more comfortable buying that one. Mm-hmm. Not that that's assured that the market's going to rally, but I feel much more comfortable buying the double bottom as it comes off the double bottom than this one, where we are now. Okay?
And I think it would be important to see also is it, when we do retest, do we make a higher low or a lower low? Because usually if it makes a higher low, that's bullish, that's positive. If it makes a lower low, then that next bounce likely is going to be a failed bounce. And so those are important patterns and things to understand when you see the next leg down, and generally when you're seeing markets and analyzing individual stocks as well.
Yeah, we don't know if we're going to get a next leg down. Rob, to be honest, no one really knows. We're based on experience and what we've seen in the past. You know, we don't really know. Yeah.
The biggest issue that we've seen right now is the credit markets. The credit markets continue to be weak. They've really been weak since about middle of last year. You saw credit spreads increase slowly. And if you talk to any technician, you say that was the biggest red flag that something like this was possible. And it looks like the market is finally catching up to the credit markets. So the question is, will the credit markets start to get better? And if that's the case, then the stock market can get better.
And we've actually seen a little hint that it is getting better.
Yeah,
so it might be.
Yeah, so is it a short-term bounce in the credit markets, or is it something more protracted?
Rob, appreciate the call. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. How much can you really expect stocks, bonds, and cash to deliver over the next 10, 20, 30 years? How much? Adjusting expectations, taking a longer view, is our main talking point today. Also, I want to discuss the GDP number, the first revision of the second quarter GDP number. That was a big surprise. So we'll talk about that. And what is the Fed looking for to raise rates? Well, there were two things that Janet Yellen said she wanted before she would raise rates. Did she get those two things? We'll discuss that. And how about some bad reasons to take your Social Security early? Some bad reasons to do it. And finally, if I get to it, I don't know how many of you know Jim Rogers out there, but he's a pretty famous investor. He says, don't rule out a bull run in commodities. Everybody hates commodities. Everybody's hating commodities. He's saying, don't rule out a bull run. Well, why do we hate them? Because demand is so low and supply is high. Right? Isn't that why we don't like them?
Or the strong dollar.
Well, that's one of the reasons, you know, it's one of the supporting reasons why. So maybe we want to see what he has to say about that. This is his area of expertise. So we might want to get, if we can get to that, I'd like to get to that. 888-99-CHART, when you're an InvestTalk Insider, you have new opportunities to learn with concise, simplified reports written personally by me or Justin. Important topics, annuities, wills, trusts, retirement programs, life insurance, updated ETF lists. Sign up now at investtalk.com. It's free.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Daniel in Palo Alto. We're still on 1220 religiously. Just had a quick question. For those of us, many of us that got stopped out on Monday and given today's swing on Tuesday, would you be a seller of the rest of your portfolio on Wednesday, given the way the financial markets are swinging, or would you hang in there, assuming this is a correction and not going deeper? So kind of a generic question that probably relates to a lot of people. I'm thinking about pulling the trigger on the rest of the things I own tonight, regardless of what the market does in the morning. But in the past, that's failed me. So would love your wisdom on how to handle a situation like that if you have anything to impart. Thanks so much. Love your show. Bye-bye.
So now he was talking about doing the pull and trigger on the rest of his portfolio on Wednesday, which was yesterday. So he must have called Tuesday.
I guess so, yeah.
Okay, well, obviously he had a big rally yesterday, and again, a follow-through rally today. So if you're going to pull the trigger, I wouldn't do everything wholesale like that ever. Okay, first of all, that's, you don't just get out completely and then get back in. Then you're trying to time the market. You know, timing the market doesn't work. It does not work. So if you felt that the market was going to be weak, you should have slowly, as you watched it over the last 6 months, slowly cut back and get out. You know, try to protect yourself a little bit because the market hasn't been doing anything, and if you were worried about it.
Well, most people don't watch the markets as
I know that's the problem. That's the problem.
So most people see the big headlines and they start to worry and start to think and freak out.
It's too late by the time you do that, though.
And usually they do it at the wrong time. And so now you see the rebound. So if you are worried and you think that what you have in your portfolio is not something you want to hold long term.
Yeah, you think you're too risky
in
that portfolio?
And you would not be comfortable holding those positions if we had a protracted, you know, pullback or bear market. Yeah, this is a good opportunity to start
selling into this rally.
Yes.
But see, he wasn't talking. Remember, it wasn't rallying when he called.
Yeah,
it was falling. So his mindset is, well, the market's going to fall apart again tomorrow, and I'm going to sell. See, think about it. We just changed that. Yeah. We said, now you sell, not because the market's falling apart, because you're getting a nice bounce. Mm-hmm. And if you don't feel comfortable holding these things long term, this is when you would cut back.
And you have to ask yourself, with the market, is this drop in the market, you know, is about in 4 or 5 days, the Dow dropped about 2,100 points from top to bottom. Is this signal or is this noise? If you think it's noise, then you ignore it and you hold your positions and, you know, if it is noise, it'll continue to go up. If it's a signal, that's when you cut back. This is when you cut back.
And by the way, no one knows which one it is.
You have to decide for yourself.
Yeah, you have to make that determination. For instance, I'm going to talk about Jim Rogers today. You know, what's he talking? He's talking about bull running the commodity. He thinks you should be buying those. Okay, why? 888-99 charts, how to get through anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I'm registered investment advisor and financial advisor Steve Peasley, along with Justin Klein. We can talk live when you call between 4 and 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. And so, therefore, we are live right now. We're here to help on Invest Talk.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Oil and metals offer plenty of advantages, but they also have more exposure to downside volatility. Could commodities be worth the risk? That's our talking point for Friday's podcast. Bring your questions and join us then.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Love to talk to you. What do you want to talk about? What's on your mind this afternoon? Well, we're going to talk about expectations. Expectations for stocks, bonds, cash. I will say this. You got to lower your expectations going forward, long term. You just have to. It's not going to be 10%. Probably not going to be 10%.
Because what's happened now is the Fed is printing money, and they've said they're trying to inflate asset prices and produce the wealth effect, right?
Yes.
But what they're doing is stealing that growth from future periods, right? As long term, stocks should only go up, 7% real term in real prices, 10% nominal. And what you've seen over the past 5 years is 20% growth in share prices. And that's out of whack from sustainability. Just like housing. Remember, housing was going up 17, 20% or more every year? Well, that's not what housing does. Housing goes up 3 to 5% per year on average, long term. And you had a big reversion to the mean. And that's kind of what you should probably expect longer term for equities is there will be a reversion to the mean. How it gets there, does it go quick, or does it go, does it gradually get back to that mean? That's the question.
And one of the reasons why it goes up 3, 5, 7% is because inflation in the past has averaged 3% or more, 3.3, 3.5. Inflation in the future looks to be less. So therefore, things are going to go up less. So I think you just got to get used to it. You're going to have less returns on stocks, and bonds are going to be even harder to get a return, maybe 2, 2.5%.
Yeah, you should expect whatever your current yield is. So,
and cash, it may over 10, 20 years keep up with inflation, mm-hmm. maybe, but not for the first few years, starting today.
Yeah,
it's way behind inflation. So we just think you should start lowering your expectation. There's an article on our website that talks about it, and I think it's right on as far as expectations. So lower them. Cherie in Fremont. How you doing, Cherie?
I'm doing fine. How are you, Steve, Justin?
We're doing good.
Okay, I would like to talk about the Chinese stocks. Now, I understand China is in turmoil, and the market is really having some major issues. But what will trigger for you to buy Chinese stocks?
What will what for us?
What will trigger us to buy?
Trigger. Well, you're going to have growth in China. Okay, they're still going to grow, but the expectation or the speculation is that they're not growing near 7% like they say. That maybe it's half that. So I think it's too early to jump back into them because I don't think we've seen reality. Now,
yeah.
I don't necessarily think you should fight the Fed in this case, meaning the Chinese government and them trying to reflate. But I think people forget that China's stock market went up 150% last year.
Yeah.
And this year it's only down 40%.
So. Yeah, it's not really down that much. Everyone thinks, oh, it's a big crash. Well, guess what? It's like a roller coaster. You go all the way up, and then you take that big, steep drop, and it's fast and it's furious. But guess what? You end up in the same place as you were before. So they really haven't. Not much has changed. And I think the biggest overhang to the Chinese market is debt, margin debt. All these individuals opened up margin accounts or brokerage accounts to invest in the stock market, and they borrowed a bunch of money to do it, and they had no idea what they were doing. And as soon as bets went against them, they had it forced to liquidate. And that's not over yet, I don't think. It's come back, certainly, but it's not completely over.
But see, the argument against what Justin just said is that the government has tried to come in and save the market, and they have a lot of power there. They have a lot of cash. Yep. If they want to save the market, if they want to pump it up or double it again, they could.
Yep.
Then the next downturn would be a disaster because mm-hmm. you can't keep that up forever.
Yeah, what they're trying to do is rejigger their economy to be more internally focused. And they're finding it's a lot harder to do when you've built these institutions based on exporting and your economy based on exporting and the debt that your economy is supporting based on exporting. You can't change that overnight or just a couple of years. It takes really, I think, a decade or more for really to modernize their economy and make it different.
So, Cherie, what I would say is that you don't want to just go invest in China. You have to be a little bit sharper and invest in individual stocks maybe in China, maybe ones that are not, maybe focused on what is going to work going forward, which may be like consumer discretionary kind of stocks, maybe large international companies that do a lot of business in China, but only if those expectations have been brought down far enough. You're going to be a little sharper. You're not going to be able to, we're not going to jump into China. I can't see us jumping into China anytime soon. I just can't.
But okay? If you look at the specific equities like Baba or Baidu, mm-hmm. they have come down significantly. So
then I would not say you would ignore.
Get into those.
Yeah, I would ignore those. I would not. I kind of like Baba. It came down sharply, and Baidu, it came down sharply.
I'm not a fan of Baba. Baba's earnings yield is about 2%.
So I think you don't have to be a fan, but yeah. I do think that, you know, a company is growing 20, 30, 40% a quarter in sales and, you know, 15 to 25% in revenue is worth a look. Had enough speculation and prognostication? Let's talk about historical trends. What is a long view for your portfolio mix? We're always open. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART. You know, I'm often asked about how an investment advisor works. Do we buy and sell for our clients? Yes. Do we charge per transaction? No. What's the main benefit of using a professional advisor? One of the most important reasons is being defensive. There's times when you just need to be defensive, keeping risk at a minimum. Now, is that a priority for our clients? Well, you know, remember, I invest what we call parallel investing. I invest the same way for myself as I do for our clients. So if I want to be defensive, if we want to be defensive, all our clients are going to be defensive with us. And that's just how it works. We try to, you know, we study the market. And we try to anticipate what might happen. And we might be wrong. We might be too early. Might be too late. But I'd rather be too early than too late.
And it's good to be able to respond quickly. You know, that's important, is to be able to be nimble and be quick when there is major market problems and market disruptions or opportunity as well. You know, back in 2009, when everybody was hating equities, it was important to be nimble and quick to respond to that opportunity. So it happens both ways, to be able to shield against risk and also to take advantage of opportunity.
And that being nimble and quick doesn't mean you sell during a market panic and you don't buy in a market panic up when everybody thinks everything's going to go up. You have to anticipate to some degree and look at the fundamentals of the market, the economy, what's going on with different parts of the market, the bond market, the credit markets all over the world, not just here in the United States. There's different things you have to look at. Anyway, so I just wanted to bring that to everybody's attention. Jim Rogers says, don't rule out a bull run in commodities. And he states, quote, as far as the commodities are concerned, it's all about supply and demand, and you're having a huge cutback in supply. We're already having supply problems in some agricultural products, and we're going to have problems with oil products. Now, who's Jim Rogers? Why should we listen to him? Well, he is a long-time commodities trader. He's very, very smart in this area, so you don't want to discount what he says. It's all about supply and demand to him. He says even if you have a demand going down, if supplies are going down faster, you can still have a bull market in the commodities area. So it depends on how the supply and demand dynamics work with each other.
And every commodity is different to an extent. But broadly, commodities move together generally.
Yeah. And I like this saying. I don't know if you ever heard this saying, Justin, but one old saying in the investment world is that the cure for low prices is low prices. Mm-hmm. Think about oil. Oil at $40 a barrel, what, did it get down to 38, 39?
Yeah, 38 and change.
Yeah. You know what? You know how many people go out of business because of that? Yeah. That, therefore, if they go out of business, they're going to stop pumping oil. They've already dramatically reduced the rig counts of looking for more oil. Mm-hmm. So therefore, there's going to be less supply.
And I think you're going to see a lot of bankruptcies by year end in the oil space, because in October, I believe it is, the banks reassess the value of the reserves that companies have. And they value based on price.
Yeah.
And so if the price is a lot lower, the value of the reserves is a lot lower, means their balance sheet's a lot less strong, and they might stop lending to some of these oil companies. So you're going to see a lot of bankers. You've already seen them in the coal space.
Yep.
You've seen
you're
going to
start
seeing
them in fracking.
Yeah, and you're going to start seeing that in fracking and even probably some takeovers as well.
Yeah, so don't think – and the reason why Justin say it's – based on price, the oil reserves is still in the ground. That oil is still in the ground, but it's not profitable to get it out of the ground. Mm-hmm. So therefore, they can't count it as something that they're going to ever get.
Yeah, and I think also is the fracking, the nature of fracking, which if you attended our webinar earlier in the year, or you can watch it if you're an InvestTalk insider as well, we talked about how fracking, the life of a fracking well is very short.
Did you listen to this quote from him? Oil reserves have been declining all over the world. We've been consuming more than we've been finding, and now the frackers are out of business. Mm-hmm. Or will be out of business soon. They may not know it yet, but they're going to be out of business soon. So don't give up on commodities.
Yeah. And like I said, the life of a fracking well is very short. It falls off very quickly because, remember, they're breaking rock to get this oil, and the more... And it takes you can't just sit there. It's not just a well that's sitting there like a traditional oil field that you're just pulling oil straight out, right? You have to get through rock to really get after the oil, and it gets harder as time goes on to get that oil. So, the frackers are still producing rapidly and a lot of oil, but as time goes on, that's going to fall off pretty quickly.
Let's go to Gene in North Carolina. Let's talk about Total or Total. How you doing, Gene?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Stephen Justin.
Thank you.
Yeah. Speaking of oil, I remember yesterday, Steve, you were talking about the big oil conglomerates mm-hmm. like Exxon and Chevron. I wanted to get your opinion on Total, the French conglomerate.
Yeah. It's also huge, $103 billion company. Total is out of France, as you just mentioned, engaged in exploration, production, refining. Transportation. They're an large integrated oil company whose sales, of course, have come down like all the other guys because oil prices have come down. And their profits have come down. Now it's a question. They don't have a lot of debt, 4% owned by management. The price of the stock is $45, and they're going to make $3.71 next year. So that doesn't make it really cheap. It's not really cheap. If you look at a PE based on last year, yeah, it looks pretty cheap, but they're not going to make that money next year. You buy these big integrated oils for one thing in my mind, at this point, is long-term investment for the dividend.
Yeah, and that dividend right now is 5.3%. Now, the big issue right now is that the payout ratio is 193% based on this low of earnings. However, traditionally, their payout ratio has been about 50% or so, 56%, which is very sustainable. So if oil prices can get back into the $60 or $70 range and stay there for an extended period of time, I think their dividend will be very safe. But if oil prices stay down here, which I don't think either of us anticipate being this low, then that dividend will probably be cut.
So what you want to do is look at Total's and all the other big integrated companies' history of dividend payouts. Have they ever cut their dividend? Have they ever cut it? And you're going to find some oil companies have always increased their dividends and never cut.
Looks like Total did. 2009, they were paid $3.28 that year in dividends. And 2010, they paid $2.53.
So you might want to reconsider it because of that. I like to look at a big oil, integrated oil company that has never cut their dividend. Mm-hmm.
I got an interesting message from my discount broker about Total. It's traded through an ADR, mm-hmm. and I don't know if that has to do with this message, but the message was that I could not reinvest the dividend. Does that sound familiar, a familiar message at all?
What?
I've never heard that, but I could see that just because it is an ADR. Remember, these ADRs, they're really just holding the foreign ownership, and you get the cash flows, et cetera, of the business. So so maybe there's something with the structure, but I haven't heard
I've
that.
I've never heard of that.
But I could see it. I just don't, I can't.
Why couldn't you really just confirm. Take the dividend and go buy in more Total? It's still traded.
I don't know.
I'm not sure about why. You should ask why, Gene. How come?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know the answer. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Our phone is always open to your questions, whether you're new to investing or have a more complex question. That's okay. 888-99-CHARTER is our anytime number.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is Chris from Louisville. Love the show. Listen to you guys on the podcast. I had a question about stock ticker TVIX. That's Tim Victor IX. Velocity shares daily 2X of the VIX. And wanted to just get your commentary on it. I understand that it is one of the most speculative things that you can get involved in. Since Thursday, I believe it's up around 120%. So it's pretty incredible, but the swings in it is crazy. But wanted to get your take on it. And if you think this volatility is going to keep up the next, you know, couple weeks with the situation China's in and other emerging markets. So I want to get your take on TVIX, Tim Victor IX. Thanks a lot, guys.
The VIX itself, and then compare it with VXX and TVIX. I experimented personally with my own funds with VXX, thinking, well, if it operates like the volatility index, it has a floor, and it won't go below a certain amount, and I can buy at that low, and then it'll pop up. And you'll find that is not true. And the VIX and TVIX. Yeah,
and that's the, you talked about the performance in the past few days, and that's the allure of it.
That's right.
Is that it could double in just a few days.
So I lost money on that deal.
Even though the VIX spiked.
And I didn't use TVIX, I used the VXX. Yeah. Even though it spiked high, still lost money on the deal.
Yeah, and they're very similar. They're trading vehicles. That's all they are. Yeah. You should never hold them for an extended period of time.
And I would say short-term trading vehicles.
Yeah.
Within weeks, not months. I would
say
maybe days.
I would say even days.
Don't think you can. Because take a look with, just look at a chart of the actual volatility index, because that's what they're supposed to be trading. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be tracking that index.
Yeah.
Take a look at that chart and then compare it with the VX and the TVIX, mm-hmm. and say, look at that. It's not the same.
It's not the same. And what they do is they have inverse stock splits. So all of a sudden, you know, the price gets low enough, and today it's at $12 TVX. And let's go back to last week when it was at $5. They'll do a reverse split, and it'll go to $50, but you only get 10% of your shares. So if you have 100 shares, now you have 10 shares. So it looks like, it's still trading around decent price. But if you look split adjusted back to, on a weekly chart, back to 2011, it had a high of split adjusted of $100,000. Split adjusted, and now it's at $12. So this is
a trap.
It is. It's a trap. It's a destroyer of value.
Yeah, so don't.
Don't touch them unless you really have a lot of tolerance for risk and you're only trading it short term.
Very short term. And then I'll tell you that's a losing proposition, trading short term, because you're trying to guess a direction and no one can.
And that's all about being technical. If you have extreme strong technical expertise about charts, you may be able to do okay on it. Otherwise, you're going to lose money.
Yeah, stay out of it. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We had the first revision of the second quarter GDP numbers, and it came in a lot stronger than anybody expected. It came in at 3.2% growth in the second quarter. That's up from like 2.3%. The first quarter, if you remember right, was up 0.6%.
Did they revise that at all? Was that
No. It stayed at 6.
Was it supposed to be revised?
No. They've already finished three revisions. Gotcha. You know, the initial call and two revisions, so they were done. So now that's 3.8% for two quarters.
So average that 1.8.
About 1.8. And the good thing about this revision, which I kind of like, is it's all subsectors, subcategories of business investment was higher. All of them.
Even commodities?
Yeah. They said investment by companies.
But you would think,
You would think.
You know, commodities would, they would be, and then a lot of big corporations have been talking about reducing their capital expenditures in
so
the commodities.
I was surprised by that. I said, all subsectors when I read it.
Yeah.
Of course, the article I read could be lying, mm-hmm. you know, but that's what they said. What does this mean for you, me? Well, this just means that the economy is a little stronger. Does this mean the Fed will change its stance? Remember, they've been real worried about the volatility of the market this week, and a couple of Feds, or at least one, said, maybe we should not do anything. And another Fed, a Kansas City Fed, said, yeah, we still should do something in September. I don't know. It was about 20%, Justin, think they're going to raise mm-hmm. the rates this
But if you go back in meeting? History, and you look at times when stocks suffered more than a 10% down move mm-hmm. in just a few days, history suggests the Fed is very sensitive to such moves, mm-hmm. and they usually cut rates within months every time.
Because of volatility, everybody's getting scared, and maybe the economy's going to crash, you know, that kind of thing. That's, it's all scary.
Yeah, you talk about 1987, the Fed cut rates. 2008, obviously. And even in 2010,
of course,
when we had a big drop.
Today, they can't cut rates.
Yeah, do QE.
I
find that unless the markets somehow just stream back to all-time highs between now and the Fed meeting, which is late September. I find it very, very improbable that they're going to raise interest rates on that meeting.
The Fed, according to Janet Lev, we're looking for two things. And those two things are jobs and inflation for them to consider raising rates. They're getting the jobs, and they're probably going to have a decent jobs report for August that they're going to look at before their mid-September meeting. But they're not getting inflation. The numbers don't show. They like to look at the personal consumption expenditure index (PCE), and their target is 2%, and it's at 0.3% annualized in June, the most recent number we could look at.
Yeah, there's really nothing on the inflation front that tells them.
I have a question for you.
They can raise rates.
Where did they come up with? Why 2%?
Yeah.
Why? What's magic about 2% that they want?
Yeah. Jeremy Grant, the interest rate observer, he says that. He says, why 2%? What's so magical about this 2% number?
Why not 1%?
And what is full employment? You know, it's nebulous.
Yeah. Do you have questions about the economy? Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART.
In the course of managing your money, your retirement portfolio, you can count on one thing year after year, and that's change. Market shifts. Fund managers develop new strategies. Businesses evolve. And, of course, your life is always changing. So it's critical to perform regular checkups to assess your strategy and asset allocation and individual holdings, because the future that was a ways off is here now, and maybe it's not what you thought it would be. Steve conducts portfolio reviews by Skype or telephone to anywhere in the U.S. Steve works with clients all over the country. So take advantage of this free review. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Schedule a Meeting. The staff will take care of the details. And thanks again for subscribing to our podcast.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. I listen to your show every day by podcast. I love your show. I always just wanted to say thank you, guys. Today, I want to ask you a question about FedEx and UPS. I want to pull one of those stocks from my portfolio. Which one do you think is better stock, and why do you think it's better? I want to know your opinion, and thank you, guys. Bye.
Well, FedEx has a lot less debt. I can say that. FedEx has a 17% return on equity. UPS, when you compare these, you know, you got to compare them side by side. UPS has a lot higher return on equity, but remember, they have a lot more debt, mm-hmm. and that kind of distorts it.
Yeah, absolutely. So the return on, that's why I look at return on assets, and that gets rid of that debt level. So the UPS return on assets is about 11%, and FedEx is, let's see, that's only about 3%, a lot lower.
Okay, we cannot do this with any certainty right on the radio, comparing one to the other and say buy this one or buy that. It's almost
to me in this market, I want to be in the company that has less debt. You know, I with the credit markets weakening, I'd rather be in FedEx. UPS, like you said, has a lot of debt, and that worries me a lot. And it looks like they have better growth as well.
Yeah, I would, if you're going to twist my arm, I think I'm going to have to go with FedEx as well. Yeah. Even though UPS has a higher dividend, but that debt worries me. I'm going to go with FedEx too. So if you're going to push me to buy one or the other, it would be FedEx as well. So I think we're both on the same page there. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Bad reasons to take your Social Security early. Now remember, full retirement age is 65 to 67, depending on when you were born. And that's, you could take it earlier, 62. You can even take it early as 60. But should you? One reason, bad reasons you should not, that people use, but they shouldn't, to take your Social Security, and is I get more money by taking it early because you get more years, right? More years, money coming in. Wrong. If you take it at 66 instead of 62, you will be ahead of the game by age 78. So unless you plan on dying earlier than 77 years old, you should not take it. If you take it at 70, you'll be ahead of the game at 82 and a half. So how long are you going to live? That's really the what you're rolling the dice there.
If you're in really good health and you have a history of longevity in your family, the longer you wait, the better. Yeah, if you,
there's
if you
very have, little argument.
Yeah, the only argument for me is if you need the money really bad,
yeah,
or you really don't think you're going to live past 80?
Some people use this reason, though. My friend died and didn't get a cent. Well, come on. Yeah, you could get hit by a bus tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But if you want to, what are the probabilities? Not the possibilities.
Yeah.
The probabilities you'll live a long time. How about I hate my job? Suck it up.
Mm-hmm. Suck it up. Or find another job.
Yeah. Don't and quit, but just don't take Social Security.
Yeah.
Don't say, I'm going to take Social Security. I'm going to quit. I'm going to quit because I can get money from Social Security. That's totally wrong. Suck it up or go find another job. I don't want to spend down my savings.
Well,
think about this. Social Security comes in every month, and it's cost of living attached, so it keeps going up every year.
And the money that you're missing out on by taking it early could be a lot more than what you're spending down your savings.
Yeah, you get 8% return from full retirement age to age 70. You get 8% a year. Mm-hmm. Social Security is going broke. It's not going broke.
Especially if you're retiring.
That is a myth. It's not going to go broke.
I think I said it's about 2030, 32. It's fully funded.
32, 34.
Yeah, somewhere in there. And then after that, it's about three quarters funded.
Yeah, 78 to 79% funded. Yeah. And that's if they don't change things. And you know what? They're going to make Justin pay more.
Exactly.
And you, the old person.
Well, you know they already have. Social Security started, the payroll tax was 2%. One, the employer paid. One, the employee paid. Now it's 12-point-something%.
Yeah,
split evenly between employer and employee.
I know. We write that check, remember?
Yes.
To the employee.
Yes.
For the employee. We're out of time for today. A quick reminder to test your tolerance for risk. Do it free on InvestTalk.com. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley with Justin Klein today. We're both registered investment advisors. And for everybody at KPP Financial, thank you for listening. Have a relaxing evening, and let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.